You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. It is, what are we here, Matt? Week 8 recap? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, we're already in week 8, or already at the end of week 8, I should say.
End of week 8, MWWire.com. Again, check our previews, recaps. We'll have some basketball stuff this week because Hoops is coming out, so be on the prepare for that. Plus, me and Andy will be back for a basketball podcast at some point to do some previews. So just subscribe. You get it all, football, basketball, and there'll be some randomness. We screw around all the time, but this is football. And we've had heartbreaks this week. At least, how many heartbreaking games would you say we had? Three? Four?
I guess it really depends on your definition of heartbreak. Because, you know, not every game was a close game this weekend. But four of them were decided by 7 points or fewer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say at least, you know, at least one of them was maybe an upset against the spread, like a massive upset against the Vegas spread that we talked about in the preview. So, you know, I would assume that heartbreak is going to mean something a little different for a lot of different fan bases around the Mountain West this weekend.
Exactly. Let's just get to it. Thursday evening football, UNLV. I like this that you put on Twitter, Matt, about coaches who block us. What's do you have the exact number in front of you?
There are a number of other Vegas beat writers who kind of, you know, I don't know how much ingest or how serious it is, but you know, they have like the daily count of like how many days it's been since UNLV won a football game and things like that. So I just put it out there very tongue in cheek to say that that Mountain West football coaches are 0-13 when they block us on Twitter. Case in point, San Jose State 27, UNLV 20. This could all be over with the push of a button. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. Coach Harson blocked us too, but they're winning. So
no, actually, he never did.
I thought he did. He blocked everybody else but us. Apparently. Maybe it's me personally. Maybe it's my personal account, possibly. Huh. I don't know. I think it was. But this game, 27-20, San Jose State gets the win, come from behind win. Like, I feel terrible for UNLV because this is a game where, not just game, but like they had lost 13 plus under Mark Shore, a newish head coach. So here's what really hurt them. Like they the fumble at the end of the first half, which led to a San Jose State touchdown with a couple seconds left. And then the game tying drive where there's no time left to score. They move the ball on the field.
Okay. So let's talk about the first one first.
Okay.
Because I think they're both indicative of the same kind of, you know, they're both symptomatic, I would say, of conservative play calling or play calling that didn't make a lot of sense. So let's start with that drive at the very end of the, late in the first half, late in the second quarter. It's first and 10 at their own 25 or more or less, right?
Yeah.
They hand the ball off to Charles Williams three straight times. And when you do that, you know, typically, okay, you're like, okay, you're trying to just bleed the clock and get into halftime with a lead. You know, like you're not threatening to score. You're just looking to try and take time off the clock.
And no timeouts are called either.
San Jose State had timeouts. Didn't seem like they were all that inclined to call them though.
Like whatever.
Until they forced the fumble. You know, Cade Hall forced the fumble. I forget exactly who picked it up. Now all of a sudden, San Jose State's got a short field with like, what was it? Like a minute to go, under a minute.
Yeah. 16 seconds left. They got the ball at the Rebels 33.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And then the Derek Deese 32-yard pass from McNash to get to the one. And then Nevin just bold timeout, rushes it in.
So my question is, like, if your entire intent was to just, like, kill the clock.
Kneel the ball.
Once you felt satisfied that you had done, that you had burned enough clock, why not just kneel on it? Yeah.
They have Charles Williams, who's a reliable running back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Like I saw some stats. He's the first Rebel back to have 700 yards in three seasons,
yes,
helped by the extra COVID year. But still, he's still very, very good. But okay, get it. Once you realize, like after first down, okay, 7-yard play. Okay, they didn't call a timeout the first time. Okay, fine, let it run down. Maybe run to try to get a first down, then take the knee. Like once you get that first down, which is what they did, why not take a knee on first and 10 with 16 seconds left?
Exactly.
Like, do you not trust Cameron Frill to take a knee? I don't know what the deal is. Like, they thought Charles Williams would bust off a 63-yarder. It's like, just they're not trying to get the ball back. They're like, whatever, we'll go to the half. Even with timeouts, not a big deal. Like, they felt we're not going to score. If I was Spartans, I probably would have taken a timeout after first down. But I bet the thing was, well, they get 7 yards in first down. What's the point? Had they made a stop or got a minimal gain or even a loss, they'd have called a timeout to try to get it back. But that, I don't know, running the ball the first time, not a big deal because they have timeouts, so don't take a knee that deep. You know what I mean? Like, you got to try to run the ball. No need to pass. Okay, they don't call timeouts. Second and three. It's run because you don't want third down because you made the punt because they'll use a timeout and get the ball back again.
Yeah.
So the first two plays were the proper play to do. But when you get the first down, take the FND. Like, what are you guys doing, man? Like, Coach Arroyo, OC, it's like, what are you doing? Like, Cade Hall got the fumble. Jay Leonard picked it up. And even, like, Spartans were not even guaranteed to score, which is also a heartbreaker because, okay, first attempt to 33, a 50-yard field goal is very difficult for any college kicker, but then they get a Derek Deese, who's amazing, gets to the one-yard line. Like, let's take a shot, so we have, and if we kick a long field goal, whatever. But, and then, yeah, there's that, and then the final drive of the game where it's like they go 19 plays.
No. I was looking at the drive before that.
Oh, the field goal?
The missed field goal.
Oh, which one was that? Oh, wait, which missed field goal?
So that's a drive that started with about 14 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It was tied at that point. San Jose State had just tied the game. And UNLV, like, it's sort of a weird game because, like, when you look at it on a per play basis, like, San Jose State outgamed the Rebels on a per play basis. And some of that is offset a little bit by the fact that San Jose State had 5 sacks, which totaled, I think, about 30 sack yards. But even with that, you know, the Spartans averaged, you know, 7 yards of play, and sacks aside, I would say that UNLV had averaged over 5, right? So it wasn't like their offense was terribly explosive, but they were moving the ball fairly effectively. You know, they had a fairly substantial time of possession advantage when all was said and done. You know, they were fairly successful on third downs, you know, way more than they had been in a lot of respects throughout the year. And so, you know, you look at that drive and they were stringing it together from their own 25-yard line. They get all the way down to the San Jose State 22. It's 4th and 1.
Yeah.
And I understand that Daniel Gutierrez had been maybe like the most reliable kicker in the conference. He had been perfect. He had just set a program record for like most consecutive field goals made. But even then, you know, 40 yards is not a gimme, right? Yeah. And you have Charles Williams in the backfield, rather, who had already, you know, moved the chains for, you know, first downs on five different plays throughout the game to that point. You know, he finished the game with like, how many rushing yards did he have? 94. I was looking at the gain rather than net. So, 24 carries, 94 yards. So like, he wasn't as explosive as he had been in the last couple of weeks, but he was getting the job done. Why not rely on him to get one more yard?
You're a team. You're not wrong, because you're a team who's lost how many, 12 in a row going to this point. You're tied. It's like, this loss hurts worse because they don't try. They try that because, like, Frill could run reasonable. Like, that whole drive, Frill ran a couple of times. Like, they ran the entire drive, essentially. There's the incomplete pass on that first and 10, but they are running almost every play but two, it looks like. There's that Kyle Williams interception on the first play. Mm-hmm. Every play was a run. Every play is more than 1 yard. So,
yeah, like, you know, being aggressive. They didn't get a lot of push, really, in throughout the entirety of the game.
Yeah.
You know, I think make they only had,
go
like,
80 yards. Yeah, if you miss it, make them go 80 yards. I don't know. They did,
six TFLs, which is, you know, it's good, not great. But a lot of that was wrapped up in sacks. You know, they had five sacks and six TFLs. So, like, basically the running game, it wasn't, like, spectacular. But given the circumstances, it was getting the job done. And not only that, Cameron Friel may have had his best overall game as a starter as well.
He turned 240 yards, efficient, only 8 incompletions. He ran a couple yards here or there, but when he, whatever sack yards, not included, obviously, but still, here's the thing. Spartans did, regardless of what Spartans, they went down the score. So if you get the first, if you don't get the first down, you still make them have to work for about 80 yards.
Yeah.
But odds were good. It's 1 yard. It's a spot in the field where I would argue any point in the game, you should go for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, unless for a college game, it's like, why, unless you're down big, whatever. This is a time where you need to be aggressive. You're a team that's not winning. You're not winning games. You settle for a field goal and one that's not, even no matter how good your kicker is, like anything beyond 30, I'd say 37 yards is probably maybe 35, whatever. 35 to 40, yeah, well, maybe. Like, once you get to 40, it's like, just go for one freaking yard. Try to draw them offside. Try to do something. I don't know. It's like, it's 1 yard. If you can't get 1 yard, what are you doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I feel especially bad for the Rebels defense too, because even within that subsequent drive that San Jose State went down and took the lead, I think, in this game, how many times did they force a fumble that San Jose State picked up? I think it was on back-to-back plays, actually.
Yeah, they got on the third and one, they had the fumble, and then
there was one right before that.
I think so. Nick Nash or something, I believe. The no gain or something, I believe it was a fumble too.
Yeah, I was seeing in the stat line that the San Jose State had 5 fumbles and only lost 2 of them.
Jeez. Not good. Got to pick up the ball. So it's like, that's a brutal break. It's tough. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I feel like in this case, you know, like, you needed to be more aggressive. And it's sort of disheartening because I feel like we saw more of that last year than we have, for the most part, out of these same Rebels this year. And I don't know exactly where that change comes from, but it's like, you know, if you're going to rely so much on your stars, right? And we talked about it, I think, primarily in the last recap going into the last preview. But like, you know, again, for the second straight week, basically nobody else out of the backfield got any carries besides Charles Williams.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you don't trust anybody else but him, your quarterback, and your handful of reliable pass catchers, and I'm talking primarily about like Kyle Williams and Steve Jenkins,
Ty Collins,
if you don't trust anybody else to do the job, then you know, if you're leaning on them already for every other situation, why not lean on them for those high leverage situations? It was working for the most part in this game.
Yeah. The worst part, possibly the worst part, was the final play game where it's 3rd and 2. You don't even get a play if you get sacked. Game over. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you take a sack in that final play? Like, we know it's a pass. They brought the house. Like, they brought a blitz. It's like, that's like the worst part. They're moving the ball. Like you said, that drive there, a mix of good pass, good running plays. They did the drive perfectly, except on the final play of the game, you can't even get an attempt in the end zone.
No, that sucks.
It does. Also, you put out like the one score games, aren't they? What, 0-4 this year in one score games, UNLV, something like that?
Well, they're 0-5 now.
Oh, 0-5. Okay. Like, they're a team where this, if we want to talk positive about them, it's they're getting closer. So they're not getting blown out. So maybe next year, they're a team where, oh, maybe they win a couple of those games, they win more of those games, or maybe they're good enough with all these young guys. I know they have to replace Charles Williams, but like they have Tyler Collins, Kyle Williams, they'll have whoever's a quarterback for at Brumfield. They have I think their quarterback play for the future set up reasonably well with whoever it is. I think that's safe to say, but you got to get some wins this year. And they got a couple of games left, but maybe they'll win a few here or there. I don't know who they have off the top of my head going forward, but this is some progress, but it's also coaching blunders. It's like, you're not going to bowl game. You have not that you have nothing to play for, but get everybody excited. You know what I mean? Like yeah. Go for it. If you get stopped, you get stopped, whatever, but go for it. Do like a play action, go for the end zone or something. You know what I mean? Fourth and one, get Charles Williams, you go over the top to somebody, do something, pull out the Texas tight end slip when they did the Big 12 title game with James Brown for that big, huge gain against, I think, Nebraska. It's like, come on, do something to move the ball. Don't just settle for a long field goal. That's not a guarantee. Like, had they been fourth and one at the 10, sure, kick the field goal. You're likely going to make it. I have no problem with that. But that part in the field, it's like, it's risky.
Speaking of coaching blunders.
No, nothing about the Spartans. We're all talking about you're going to be blowing the game. Anything you want to say about SJSU? Are we good? That was a nice move to go on to, and I blew it for you. Sorry.
No, I mean, I guess, you know, I still don't know what to make of this team.
So you got Nick Nash, the quarterback.
And I think it is mostly dependent on, like, you know, the offense being able to perform well against defenses that allow them to perform well. And I think, especially when you look at the last month or so and you compare, you know, the performance against New Mexico State and UNLV to the performances they had against San Diego State and Colorado State, there's really no comparison. And yeah. So they're kind of, you know, and the defense, again, has remained mostly the same. You know, they would say that they led the way in this game, you know, five sacks, you know, forced the turnover and things like that. But the offense has been very up and down relative to its competition. And so you see Nash kind of having a breakout game. And a lot of that had to do yeah. with their ability to exploit the exact same thing that Arizona State was able to with Jaden Daniels. You know, Nash had 17 carries and 121 yards. So yeah, I guess you would call it like what, a B+ performance on that side of the ball. And if they can get more of that, they can still be a threat. Like, you know, they're not like any, like they're not probably going to win the West Division title or anything like that, but more performances like this, and they could get into bowl eligibility pretty comfortably in the next couple of weeks. It's just a matter of which offense is going to show up.
Well, it's like, look what San Diego State, their game was almost a victory. Like,
exactly.
That's a team where we'll get them, but their offense isn't good, so they can keep pace because the Spartans defense is good enough. But yeah, I'd say B+ just because Tyler Evans didn't do great. Isaiah Hamilton, did he play? Because he had no catches, it looks like.
He had targets, no catches.
That's what I thought. Okay, I was like making sure. So yeah, I'd say Nick Nash probably his best performance as a Spartan, 200 yards, 120 rushing, so they did well. So yeah, they're a team that could cause enough trouble, San Jose State, to just mess with somebody, I think, right? At this point.
Yeah.
All right, next game. Oh boy. Colorado State 24, Utah State 26.
Be honest, how many times did you watch that replay?
Five? I don't know. Probably not enough. Here's what I have to say. Besides, I'll get to a minute with Coach Adazio throwing everybody under the bus. If you have just a life question for you, Matt. If you have something very important you're going through, it's like, all right, you're either going to, if scenario A happens, you're doing this. If scenario B happens, you're doing this. Like, and it's going to be like, it's going to be a quick decision. Or not even a quick decision, just a big decision. You want to, you know, if this happens, we're doing this. If this happens, we're doing this. Would you have some sort of communication or signal, particularly when it involves other people, of saying, yes, we're doing this, or no, we're doing this, like some sort of signal?
I would like to think I have that base covered.
Well, Steve Adazio does not.
Apparently not.
Because they said they did not give the signal to, he says, Adazio, no coach signaled them on, and the unit got, and a quick field goal unit got carried away. Like, you should have a signal, field goal, spike. It's not like no go or something that says go or no go. Like, be ready. They're probably, I don't remember, I'm trying to recall what I saw, but you see a situation. All right, the field goal unit, everybody's on the field goal team is lined up by the ball or like on the sideline, lined up ready to go, like right behind the out of bounds. Mm-hmm. So when the play's dead, they run and go. So they're ready to go, but it needs to be a signal. It's like, no, stay back. We're spiking. No, like something to say yes or no. You don't have that. Plus also another issue with this. There was, they did, okay, they rushed on the field. Oh, crap, you got to do this. Okay, we're going to kick it. They still had time to set a couple seconds to get more settled than they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time the ball was kicked in the air, there was still 1 second left on the clock, which means they kicked it with 4 or 5 seconds left?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So they could have settled, like, oh, crap, we're on the field, we got to do this. They still could have taken, okay, a deep breath or two, and then kicked the ball. Like, they were, but the biggest thing is coaching is like, am I correctly reading this? Adazio is a special teams coach. Is there no?
He is more or less doing it himself. Yeah. They don't have a special teams coordinator, which, you know, I wrote in the winners and losers column, like, in itself, that is not unusual. There are 7 FBS teams that do not have a special teams coordinator, but that, man,
unusual, then. Man, 7 of 130?
Like, that's what I'm saying. It's not like he's the only one who's chosen to make that move, but like, how often are they going to get snake bit by this before somebody does something about that?
I don't know, man, because that is like, and they have to give the callers this, like, dude, just own up to it. You screwed up. You didn't have them ready to go. You didn't say we're going or not going. Like, the kids are excited, but you got to be the adult in the room and say, hey, where's your signal to go on the field or not? They go on there, they miss the field goal, they lose, Utah State wins. Like, they could have been, like, they would have been, how long was the field goal? I don't have that in front of me. What was the length? It was makeable, right? It wasn't, like, super long.
It wasn't an impossible field goal. It was a 42-yarder.
Okay, so within range. Like, nothing crazy, but not easy either. Especially if you're running out the rest you're going. But, like, this Rams team, like, their defense played amazing in this game.
Yes.
13 TFLs, 8 sacks, 4 pass deflections. They were all over Logan Bonner. The running game for Utah State only averaged just – whatever, this is include sack, not reducing for sack yardage, but 2.3 yards per carry.
You just look at that trio of Elelion Miller, Pelade Makakona, and John Gentry. Like, between them, maybe 4 yards a carry. Like, that, yeah, yeah, and that's Noah, a big team win right there.
Yeah, Noah had almost 100 yards, but took him 26 carries under 4 yards per. And like, they look at the offense. David Bailey played well. Todd Santeo had a really good game. Dante Wright came back and did reasonably well, 4 for 71. Like, not amazing, but good. They got a different receiver, Gary Williams, involved. They, like, David Bailey caught almost had 200 total yards of offense. Like, there's no reason the Rams should have lost this game, even foregoing that final kick blunder.
Well, and not only that, like, you know, the defense, I would say the defense did its job again. Like, you know, with sack yardage and everything, they held the Aggies to 4.4 yards per play. You know, they held them to, what, 3 field goals and 4 red zone opportunities? You know, yeah. 9 points, 4 chances. That's pretty impressive under normal circumstances, especially considering the offense also scored a touchdown on all 3 of its own red zone tries. You know, they were better on third downs. Some of that was offset by USU's willingness to go for it on fourth down. You know, the Aggies were also 3 of 3. It was just sort of like
fumble. Well, the fumble after a touchdown as well didn't help them out either.
But the lack of discipline.
Yeah.
And you know, and obviously the field goal mess was the most glaring example, but also they had 9 penalties for 86 yards as well.
Mm-hmm.
Twice as many penalties, twice as much penalty yardage. A lot of those penalties played a role in pretty much every single Utah State scoring drive. So, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, everybody did a lot of things right, but they did just enough dumb things to undermine the entire story.
Yeah, -1 turnover margin. They scored a touchdown off the field, off the fumble. Utah State did. They, what else did they do? The third downs weren't great. Like, they held Utah State to 4 of 18 on third downs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Rams, like, okay, let me ask you one point, because I kind of watched that mute fast forward and stuff. Were people really complaining about maybe one of the pass interference, offensive PI on the Utah State touchdown? Were people really clamoring for that?
Some people were. I don't know if it was particularly strong clamoring, though.
I just call that the Michael Irvin touchdown catch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He played with the Cowboys. His arms are locked up close. He does just enough to – there may have been some extension there, but not really enough to – not a big old push off.
Yeah.
So I saw that a few times. I was like, who's the guy who played in NFL, Fresno, Cameron, what's his name?
Cameron
Morrell. He's like, no. Essentially, we replied to us like, no, it's not PI or something. But that I saw that. I'm like, well, no, there's a little bit there. But the DB had his hand on him too a little bit. So it's like, it's
mm-hmm.
But Utah State, like, they didn't play bad, really, but they didn't play good either. Like, Logan Bonner, yeah, it could have been better, but still had over 200 something yards, 230. The defense played okay. They had a handful of TFLs and sacks. Nothing to write home about. Shaq Bond, not going Shaq Bond's leading tackler in any type of game when he plays deep secondary. Justin Rice did fine, but you're right on this. Like Utah, CSU did a lot of things very good, but the few glaring things just screwed them at the end.
Yeah, and it sort of reminds me a little bit about something that came up during the course of talking a little bit about this week's updated SP Plus rankings. And for a few weeks now, Utah State fans have been pointing out, okay, well, why are the Aggies lacking? And I'm trying to look up exactly where they are at this point. You know, they're still 103rd nationally by SP Plus, despite being 5-2. And so a lot of Utah State fans, if they aren't familiar with what the system is meant to actually gauge, they think, okay, well, why is that the case?
Preseason expectations.
That's part of it. And it sort of reminded me a little bit about, and I think I had to go and look it up to confirm it, but about like 2018 Hawaii, the very first year that Nick Rolovich era before they won the division title.
The year before, okay.
Where they went 8-6, but they finished in the triple digits by SP Plus. And a lot of that is like, okay, well, why does that happen? It's because of things like being outgained by 2 yards per play, giving up so many sacks and so many TFLs. And so I didn't ask for it. I wish I had, but I have to imagine that, by Bill Connolly's post-game win expectancy, that if you put all these numbers into kind of a neutral mix and ran this game out again, I have to think that CSU would have won this game more than 50% of the time.
So to
go back to the larger point, this is the fourth time this year that Utah State has beaten someone while getting outgained on a per play basis. The only one that they have where that didn't happen was North Dakota. And so, you give them credit for putting things together for like finding ways to win. But then you have to realize, you have to take a step back and think, okay, well, the only reason they lost this game is because Steve Adazio really screwed up. Because if they had done exactly what everybody expected them to do, that previous play, which everybody forgets now, Ty McCullough, 15 yards, like right in the center of the field, like he did his job. Utah State's defense had a breakdown on that play. They let him get open in a situation where he probably should not have. And then all hell broke loose immediately after. And that's not the first time that's happened to Utah State this year. So are they flying over their skis a little bit? Maybe. I mean, I don't think they're a bad team. I think they're definitely improved on what they were a year before.
Are we talking about first place Utah State at the moment? Are they still in first place?
They are in first place. They got sole possession.
They somehow be there for us. So yeah. Oh my goodness.
So they control their own destiny, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Air Force, come on, how'd you blow it? Okay, I don't care. It's fine. Utah State, good for them. Yeah, they're getting the job done. That's all that matters, right?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, a win is a win, no matter how pretty it is, how wild it is. They're not going to apologize for Steve Adazio making a mess of himself.
I see. Well, he needs to take some responsibility and figure things out on his own, because he ruined. Could you say this might be their best performance of the year? Rams all just about. Like,
I mean, probably, yeah.
It's up there. It's like, yeah, it's only 24 points, but like what Senteo has done most of the year, he hasn't thrown this well. It's like, if he gets above 200 yards, I'm like, oh, that's good.
Yeah, he's really coming on strong in the last few weeks. And so, like, it's getting to the point where it's like,
it's, I can't sort make of fun a waste, of him anymore.
it's sort of like a wasted performance, yeah.
Yeah, he's proved me wrong to play better. Like, he's the only option they really had, but yeah, he didn't run as much, which is probably better, especially when David Bailey had 30 carries for 159. But yeah, it's tough. We'll see if the Rams, they're 3-4, if they go to a bowl game. I don't know, man. They're getting there, but it's like just annoying. It's just frustrating where if you're a fan of the team, but if you're just watching, it's like, what are you doing, coach? It's like I'll go back to this, we'll move on, but you need to have a go signal and a no-go signal. You know what I mean? Like, that's very important, because there's, when you don't want to go, you really don't want to go do something. They'd say no.
Yeah.
And then here's what the doom, like even a worse scenario could have been. Holy crap. Offense is confused. Special teams confused. You kick the ball. He makes it, too many men on the field. Could have been a real possibility in that game. And then it goes back to, what did you say? It was a 42 yarder he kicked.
It was. Yeah.
You go back to 47. Like, you're going to try that again. Oh boy. Like, you have no timeouts, clock runs. Jeremy, what's the rule for the automatic clock runoff? Would the clock just expire with the penalty? Is there like a 10-second runoff maybe? I don't recall what that rule is, but there might, like, that might have been a possibility. Either the clock runs out because you have to penalty, because it's like you purposely doing a penalty to get the ball again or something, one of those type of deals. I don't know how if that exactly is the case. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But let's just say there's a penalty. They get to kick again. The clock's going to wind. So you got to be ready with a couple seconds. And then you got to, kick the ball in 2 seconds and your 5 yards back. So it could have been, well, I don't know how it gets much worse, but it could have been, holy crap, what now? Especially if you made it. But
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, what game do we have next year?
Oh, that would be New Mexico 14, Wyoming 3.
How is Wyoming never 4-0, man?
Are they going to go, like, have they found the end zone this month? I don't even remember.
Oh, are they over October? A touchdown?
That's what I'm saying. Like, is it? It feels like they are. I can't prove it, but it feels like
they just. I'll look while we get to the games. They didn't score last week. Were they shut out last week?
Yes.
So at least 2 weeks. I will look and see. But 14-3. First off, congrats to coach.
Scored twice against Air Force. It just feels like it's been a month.
So man, it's not looking good for them. But they brought in Isaiah Chavez, who. Only 10 of 11, 112 yards. That's all was needed.
I'm sorry. That's a new program record for accuracy. Thank you.
Sure. Was that 91%?
Not quite.
What is it?
I think technically it's like 88.9, I think, or 89.9, something like that. Either way, it's very good.
It is very good. Maybe he's a quarterback of the future, because wasn't he the QB who beat Fresno State last year?
Sorry, he was also the QB who beat Wyoming last year.
Okay, so maybe he should be getting the ball.
He's about to be public enemy number one out there in Laramie. But okay. I think
Terry Williams, goodbye.
But the box score really sort of like it sort of obscures the what I consider to be one of the major stories in the game, which is offensive coordinator Derek Wehrheim. You know, he must have seen something in the film, or maybe just watched a lot of film over the last several weeks and realized, with the injuries at quarterback, the injury to Terry Wilson. The ineffectiveness that because they had really scuffled a lot coming into this game. And so we thought, especially against a strong Wyoming defense, that it might be more of the same. And then they came out and they did a lot of triple option in the first half. Did you notice that?
That is a little different. The reason Isaiah Chavez ran the ball 16 times, take advantage of that stuff.
Yeah, and led the team in rushing, by the way.
It's fine.
49 yards on the ground.
Yeah, good enough, fine.
Yeah, so they took it, and it was really that we talked about the youth movement coming into this year, and sort of the ups and downs of kind of breaking in a lot of new playmakers at once. And for 1 week, it seemed like those guys were paying the biggest dividends. Aaron Dumas scored a touchdown on the ground, 12 carries, 35 yards, not flashy, but he was complimented by Chavez, who's I believe still a freshman himself technically. Luke Weissong had another strong game, 46 yards on 8 carries. you know, so they took advantage of his speed to be able to attack the edges in a way that they really hadn't been able to or hadn't tried in weeks past. And while the passing game, I think, was more functional than it was like, you know, air raidy or anything like that, you know, they still managed to get a couple of big plays out of that too. You know, Kyle Jarvis had a big 34-yard catch to set up a touchdown. Trace Buckler, his lone catch was 43 yards. And so, again, it wasn't like an A-plus performance, but it was more than enough to move the ball just enough against a Wyoming defense that, you know, by and large, I would say did its job. You know, they only averaged 4.7 yards per play, the Lobos did. And yeah, Wyoming did, like, one thing that was disappointing about the game is that Wyoming didn't generate a ton of pressure when on those rare chances that they dropped back to pass. Like, they didn't even have any QB hurries, let alone any sacks.
What? Why were they throwing 30 times?
I don't know.
Because
that's why you look at, okay, they averaged under 4 yards per play. The Cowboys did on offense. Oof. That's a problem because neither QB showed up again in this game.
And neither did Xavier Valade somehow. Like, give credit to Lobo's defense, but he only had 41 yards and long of eight.
Okay,
like,
so here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. And Wyoming fans, I think, were starting to point it out more and more, too. That offensive line looked really shaky against this New Mexico front.
Totally did, yeah. And Lobo's got some decent players back. Like, they have players. Like, Joey Noble had 1.5 TFLs at half a sack. They were getting the quarterback. They were getting enough. Like, they weren't amazing. Well, okay, let me rephrase that. Wyoming scored 3 points. Like, if you look at, like, the big stats, like, oh, sacks, TFLs, pass defenses, they did. Yeah, they weren't that great. Two sacks, 4 TFLs, nothing amazing. But they were stopping Valade at the line of scrimmage, essentially. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Him or Titus Sweeney got the ball. Williams ran okay. But it's like their longest running play was a Titus run play of 11 yards. Like, Sean Tabers had a 10-yarder.
Yeah, so it wasn't like the Lobos were racking up a lot of disruption. Like, you know, we talk about stuff rate and things like that.
Behind the yard, behind the line, yeah.
It wasn't like they were doing a ton of that, but they weren't allowing a lot of big plays either.
Which is helpful to win, right?
Well, I mean, it's especially helpful when you want to throw on first down as often as Wyoming did. Like, you know, what have they proven this year that is anything that they should be doing? And some of that has to do with, you know, the offensive line, where if they can't open holes, if they can't do what they're accustomed to doing, you know, that's where I think, you know, that 3 of 12 on third down comes from, you know, and that their willingness to kind of extend drives. They were only 1 of 3 on fourth downs as well. So, like, they put themselves out there to try and extend drives. They just don't have, I guess you would call it scheme at this point. Like, their scheme just isn't working.
They want to throw more, which we get, but this is clearly too much. And it's not like New Mexico's a great team. They got 3 wins. That's very good for them. They're on the right track. They're getting there.
It also didn't make a lot of sense, the rotation that Craig Bull was using, because Chambers started the game, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when did he get replaced by Levi Williams? Wasn't it like in the second quarter? I believe it was Ryan Thorburn who had a write-up of the game afterwards. I want to say it was like in the second quarter. Yeah, it was the first full drive of the second quarter. You know, Chambers throws an incomplete pass to Isaiah Nair. They punt away. New Mexico takes over at the 12. They get the ball back. Next time they get the ball back, Levi Williams is under center. They put together a field goal drive. New Mexico strings together their second touchdown drive. Sean Chambers doesn't see the ball, doesn't see the field again until the fourth quarter.
I don't know. They're
and apparently the only reason, I mean, it's really hard to see why Williams got benched or rotated out or whatever you want to call it, because, you know, it was the last full drive that he had kind of late in the third quarter. Like, it wasn't a great drive. Like, they only moved the ball 12 yards before punting away. Yeah. But I just don't understand what they were trying to accomplish, because the next time they had the ball and then Chambers rotated back in, it was because Isaiah Neighbor fumbled. It was a running play. I was trying to remember if it was a running play or a punt return. It was first and 10 at their own 20. Wyoming's managed to force a missed field goal in that situation. And then Chambers comes out. So, like, there's really nothing to suggest why Chambers came out and then subsequently why Williams came out. And it was really interesting reading both of their post-game quotes, because I can't remember what they said exactly, but it's pretty obvious that both guys are frustrated with whatever's going on the sidelines there.
They don't know what's going on. You know what I mean? It's like nothing's working. That's a problem.
They don't have a quarterback because neither of them have seized the job at this point.
Well, they're also putting them in a bad position to throw 30 times.
Exactly.
Like they were down 14-3 at halftime. I get the running game's not working, but you have what they could do is like, they have what I know they tried to. Chambers ran 10 times. They tried to mix them into a ground game. Like the quarterbacks ran 15 times for 44 yards. Lobos weren't getting TFLs or getting them. They were just not getting big plays. So it's like they were trying to do what we typically want them to do. But I think part of it, the offensive line, and whatever you want to say about Valade, whether it's his play or the offensive line or both, more the line probably than that, he didn't have a good game. Because if he goes for like 14 for 100 or 14 for 90, like or just double his yards, 14 for 84, they're probably not throwing, they're not throwing 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's part of it too. The running game's like going, well, we got to pass because not move the ball either way. And they can't pass like, oh, geez.
So if you're in the building and you're a decision maker for the Wyoming coaching staff, are you pulling the plug on Sean Chambers at this point?
I don't know. Because maybe give him a full game. Give Levi Williams a full game, not just 7 pass attempts.
Because it seems like Chambers has gone backwards for the last month straight.
Yeah,
in his last 4 games, 2 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, under 6 yards per play in each game, under 5 yards per play in the last 2 weeks against Fresno State and New Mexico. Which and again, you know, New Mexico's got a solid defense, but this is not a defense against which Wyoming should be averaging 4.2 yards per attempt. And that's exactly what Chambers did in this game. Under 50% completion rate in the last 3 games, I think you got to give Lee Williams an extended addition again. Because we talked about at the beginning of the year, like, yeah, Chambers has been injured. He's seen basically the equivalent of a full season at this point. I think I've seen enough if I'm making that decision.
Or at least give Williams a full game. Like, don't pull him around and play just sparingly. Give him a shot. I know you're 4-3. They were, but not. Here's the point: bowl game's still in the works. There's no way.
That's not even. Do you really think that's a given? If they get to a bowl game, it's because the defense drags them there.
Well, I'm checking their schedule. I mean, they need 2. They're 4-3. They only need 2 wins. What's left? I don't have this schedule in front of me, so maybe I'm way off base. But I mean, they're reasonably close. Like division wise, no, they're done. 0-3. It's not happening. But if my computer work faster. But you're right, but maybe he, because they have, let's see here real quick. But I'm just saying, 2 wins out of what they've left, out of what, 5 games?
Okay, so they get they go to San Jose State next week.
They can win that.
And then they're home versus Colorado State for the Border War.
I think they can win that too.
At Boise, at Utah State.
Eh.
And then home versus Hawaii for the Pennyoil Trophy.
It's not impossible. I'd give it a 50-50 chance to make a bowl game.
Can they find the end zone before we have that talk?
Sure, we could totally. That. I'm just saying that schedule's not overly daunting. Where they
that coaching staff is wasting a lot of really strong defensive performances. And I do not blame Wyoming fans for whatever frustrations they're feeling, because you know they point out that Craig Bohl too is the highest paid coach in the Mountain West.
Oof,
at this point, with this team, which came into the year as one of the most experienced anywhere in the country. Like, has there been a bigger disappointment in the group of 5?
That'll take me a bigger conversation to think about what's out there, but
they've got a month to figure it out, because right now that's where they're at, in my opinion.
Hold on. I went to ESPN FPI. Do you want to guess what? Oh, sorry. I looked at this incorrectly. Do you want to guess their chance of winning out, what it says?
It's probably like 1%.
It's exactly 1.0%. I'm trying to pull up here. My internet's being super slow. But they give you they're still projected win total of 6.2 wins.
Mm-hmm.
So you still give them a chance to go to a bowl game. As for a specific percentage, let me just see if my internet will help me out and go faster. But basically, they're still leaning on the side of them, figuring things out. Like you said, defense leading them the way to get to bowl game. They have just a win probability. Oh my gosh, my internet is ridiculously sad. It's not working. Oh, here we go. Hold on. This is such great podcasting. Well, here's the thing why it's interesting. Like we say, I'm pretty close. Like it's interesting. They're giving, I say it 5 times. 75% chance to beat Hawaii, which seems high. But San Jose State is basically a toss-up at 45%. CSU, 47%. Utah State, 41%. Boise's 15%. So they're figuring they'll probably win one of those three toss-up games where they're not favored and then beat Hawaii.
I guess we'll see.
I don't know if they will, but I'm saying I'd still give them a 50-50 chance. But you're right. Touchdowns, kind of a prerequisite to go bowling, right? You think?
It typically helps, yes.
It does help. All right, what do we got next? Let's go to the Aztecs game, right?
Yeah, San Diego State 20, Air Force 14.
So despite Air Force not historically playing well the past while, are they getting dominated by San Diego State all the time?
Okay, so you read that column?
I glanced over it, so I know the gist of it, but yeah, it's like...
Okay, so the short answer is no.
Bad take.
The short answer is bad take. And the reason I pointed that out, because yes, Air Force has lost 9 in a row to the Aztecs, which I didn't realize. Not
good, clearly. I didn't know that many. I thought it was like 5 or 6.
But I
think one of those is a title game, I believe. One of those is.
Yeah, one of those. So going back to, 2015, I believe, there's 2015, then 2017, 2018, and then this game. 4 straight 1-score losses in this series for the Falcons.
Interesting.
And it was a really interesting game to watch, because San Diego State, they kind of sort of in a lot of ways followed sort of the same pattern that they did against the Utah game, where they got out to a huge lead and then very nearly let the opposition back in. They maybe relented a little bit in the second half when Air Force was, oh, by the way, running out of backup quarterback and maybe missing one or two of the biggest playmakers. And so it was one of those things where a handful of things go differently. This could be a much bigger tale, but then you really take a step back and figure out, okay, well, what did San Diego State do to win this game? Because I think I don't want to necessarily discredit the Aztecs. They went out and they won this game because they took advantage of the opportunities that they created for themselves. But to me, the biggest number in this game, rushing success rate, San Diego State, 42%. And that was without Greg Bell for most of the game, mind you.
Yeah.
Air Force, 28%, 19% success rate overall on offense. That's your game right there.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this was a defensive showcase in which the Air Force offense made just enough mistakes to put the defense under pressure. The Aztecs didn't string together a lot of long drives in this game. I saw some Aztecs fans talking to, like, okay, now that was a drive. And you look at it, it was 12 plays, 42 yards. Then, for their first scoring drive, their first touchdown drive.
12 plays, half the field.
Took a lot of time off, took a lot of time off the clock. But they had like basically one drive, which was their final touchdown drive, proved to be very important for them. That went 7 plays, 75 yards. Other than that, the offense was very hit or miss. They had more, they had twice as many 3-and-outs as Air Force did. But but the defense did its job by shutting down the Air Force running game, by winning the turnover battle. The Zeke Daniels had the interception on the first drive from Dallas Branch, had a very heads up kind of play in coverage. And then they forced a fumble later on. And they took advantage of both of those things. They turned they turned both turnovers into 2 field goals that ultimately made the difference in this game. So I see a game where both defenses played at a high level, but the Air Force offense in particular blinked, and that was really the difference in this game.
Yeah, it was not what they needed to do against his ass. Not that they blinked, but Aztec's defense is really good too. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, neither of these teams really blew the other away on offense. Like, the Aztecs outgained the Falcons on a per play basis, 4.4 to 4.1.
Oh, geez, that was brutal.
But again, if you look at it, like, neither side was able to get into the backfield all that often. One sack apiece, which, given how little these teams throw the football, probably not a big deal. San Diego State only had 5 TFLs, though, for 9 total yards of loss. Air Force only had 3. The key difference was that, you look at Air Force's running game, Brad Roberts, 7 carries, 27 yards. And, one of those yards was an 11-yard run. So they had a handful of big plays. Mm-hmm. But, if I were to look at an opportunity rate, for example, in this game, which I don't have that number in front of me, but I have to imagine that weighed out heavily in favor of the Aztecs, where they weren't getting a lot of pushback. They weren't getting into the backfield that much, but they weren't really giving a lot of ground either. And I think that sort of bears itself out in the fact that Air Force was only 4 of 16 on third downs and having to face 3rd and 7 on average in this game, having to throw the ball way more often than they wanted to, especially once they got behind by 20 points.
Also, it doesn't help a couple of things here, like the points off turnovers.
Yeah.
For Air Force, like the interception field goal, the fumble field goal, and there wasn't there one other, I believe. No, maybe that was it. I thought there was a third one. No, that was it, sir. Turnover down, so touchdown. So that's technically a turnover, in my opinion, essentially. Yeah. You don't get it. So those three drives were all led to that really different. That's what, 13 points?
Yeah.
Short fields or shortish fields, essentially, because that first one, it only went 4 yards, you know what I mean? And they got the field goal, and you have Ariza there kicking the ball like the 81-yarder, which was it 81 yards? Not even his longest one of the season, where he was in the end zone. And it was like, it wasn't a bounce. It was in the air for majority of that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a bounce and just spun to the other end of the field. Did it go to the 20, like 75 yards in the air just about?
Yeah.
It was something. It only bounced like a little bit. The Air Force guy was back there to get the ball. But that obviously makes a difference. But turnover and downs and they score points. Like that was a big key as well, where Air Force made mistakes. And then,
And that's the other thing too. San Diego State won the field position game. We talked about it in the preview, where both of these teams had benefited from either creating really strong field advantage or putting opponents in really bad situations. Air Force's starting field position on average was their own 22-yard line. Meanwhile, the Aztecs had 4 different drives, not including like the last drive to end the game, where they started on Air Force's side of the field. Again, that's probably your game right there.
Yeah, that's it. 2014, Aztecs win 7-0, undefeated. Are they? I don't have the recent polls. Are they a top 20 team yet? They moved up what, one spot?
They're top 20 in the coaches poll. They're number 20 overall. In the AP poll, they moved up to number 21.
Okay, I just have the box score and it says 22. I knew that was from the week. So there's them, and there's Cincinnati, who's undefeated, but also number 2 in the country. I guess SMU as well is ahead of him by a couple spots. Mm-hmm. Anything else to add to this game? Like, Lucas Johnson didn't blow anybody's doors off. He did just whatever. He started. He didn't pass a ton. Didn't run a lot. They get the job done, essentially, for what he did. So I was hoping to touch more, because 11 to 13 is good, like efficiency-wise, but like a few more yards. And I thought his running would have been better, but 3 for 1. But we'll see if he's a guy going forward. He got the call, but didn't really achieve what I was hoping he would achieve. Like, if you complete 11 passes, you should get probably closer to 100 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other big story that's going to emerge out of this game, which I'm assuming we'll probably know more about in a couple of weeks, Air Force is on bye, I believe, in week 9. Zeke Daniels, he got knocked out in this game. He got replaced by Warren Bryan. Mm-hmm. And with the backup quarterback, like, let's not forget, like, the running game was really held in check. They averaged 4 yards per play as a team on the ground, but they didn't miss by much. There was the one pass that I believe he threw to Micah Davis and went right through his hands. Hit him in his hand, and it would have been an 86-yard touchdown if he held on to it.
Yeah, that's a big play, right?
Yeah, so you have to figure, like, hopefully they'll get that sorted out in practice. Like, those 50-50 shots, like, you want to take advantage of them. Like, you can't have drops like that especially when you're behind, which they were at that point. So, we'll see about Daniels. We'll see about some of the other playmakers. It's going to be gut check time against Army in a couple weeks too.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. All right, so we get to your game, Fresno, Nevada.
Let's do it.
How excited were you about this game?
I don't know if excited was the right word.
never really felt
like the lead was safe as long as Carson Strong was still throwing.
You tell me, like, the 16 fourth quarter points to nearly come from behind to get the win?
No, I did not like that, actually.
No, it was so what was your thoughts? Like, this was did this live up? I felt I'd like points. If there were more points, that'd be great. But this game kind of lived up to being the close game, both, like, especially particularly Carson Strong throwing as well as he did. Your team gets the win. So is it more what a sigh of relief, I guess? Is that what you're getting at? Instead of a victory, we won. Yay. It's like, phew, it's over. We got the win.
Yeah, because I mean, it really depends on what measures you look at, but it was sort of like a back and forth kind of game where, yeah, it's both teams scored in the 30s, but you could say that both defenses made their share of plays as well.
Yeah. Because there wasn't a ton of points. Like I could mention, the 34 points, a decent amount, but you're right. Like there's interception Fresno State had. The rushing game for Nevada was okay with Toa Taua. Like, not on Jordan Mims, but for Fresno, like Fresno's defense made plays, but their secondary clearly did not because Carson Strong threw it 61 times.
Well, I mean, you say that the running game did fine, but Taua gained 39 of his 62 rushing yards on two plays.
Hey, I'll tell you this, it all counts. You told me it all counts. So, but overall, even, yeah, you're right, he had long of 28, but it's the boomer bust type of thing that we're seeing with him. Like overall, well, yeah, you're right. But I always like to joke with you because you told me, hey, it all counts. It doesn't matter. But you're right.
Well, I mean, case in point.
Two big plays doesn't make a game.
No, I mean, yes and no. Because on the one hand, you know, Taua's struggles in this game and maybe the offensive line by extension, we'll talk more about that in a minute. Nevada, I believe, and I think it was Nathan Shoup of the Reno Slant podcast to put this out there. Nevada had four different drives that stalled within the Fresno State 40-yard line where they came away with 0 points. There was the interception that Carson Strong, where he had a defender in his face, kind of a duck throw that Darren Bland was able to come down with. You know, very next drive, they get down to the Fresno State 38 and they punt.
What are you doing? I know, like,
mind-boggling. And then more to the point I wanted to make, I believe it was when they were at, you know, it was fourth and one at the Fresno State 33, and they run the Wildcat and turn it over on downs. And to me, like, it wasn't necessarily that running the Wildcat was in itself like a bad idea, because they run it ever so often. And, you know, sometimes it works in a big way. Like there was the fourth down play that they had, I believe, in the bowl game last year against Tulane, where, you know, they worked out. But to me, it just seemed like a play that developed way too slowly in that particular situation where Fresno State was able to close in on it and keep them from moving the chains. And when you have a quarterback who's dealing like Carson Strong was, interception aside, like, why are you calling that play in that situation? Why are you not trusting your potential first round draft pick NFL quarterback to get you 1 yard?
Hey, they could have brought Nate Cox 6'9", to lean over and get to 1 yard.
I mean, yeah, you could literally stand under center and just fall over and see what happens or something.
Just say it, I know.
But I guess Strong, what I'm saying is, like,
you know, he does that, though.
Strong did, like, literally everything he could to win this game. 476 yards, four touchdowns. And he took a beating while doing it.
Yeah.
Five sacks. And maybe more to kind of what I was talking about a minute ago, Fresno State had 11 tackles for loss in this game. They were getting after the running backs, keeping both, you know, Taua and Devontae Lee in check, making Nevada more one-dimensional than they wanted to be. And it seemed like Nevada was okay with it, not only because Strong can make all the throws pretty evidently, but I got the sense that, like, Jay Norvell and Matt Mummy were betting that Nevada's wide receivers could give Fresno State's defensive backs the slip more often than not. They were running a lot of screens. Well, you know, they weren't really taking that many shots down the field.
Romeo Dubs, 24, only long plays, only 24 yards, but he had, is 19 receptions a Mountain West record?
I believe it's a program record, at least.
Because I'm trying to think, like, whatever receiver would catch, like, I have no clue. I'm trying to think of random guys. Like, who gets that? Like, Devonte Adams of Fresno State, I don't know. When he had Keyshawn Johnson really good a couple years ago, like, what player would be getting thrown that many times? Steve Smith at Utah years ago? I don't know, but he was 19. That's got to be up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking this a quick question about the game. Well, not the game, but kind of a bigger picture. Is Jordan Mims now the starting running back for Fresno State?
I mean, the only reason I would say no is because the only reason he got so much playing time is because Ronnie Rivers got knocked out by an injury.
Okay, just wondering. Okay.
But yeah, he went out and reminded people why he was the starting running back a few years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Before he got banged up, before he redshirted for a year.
That's my point. Like, if he plays this well, is he going to take over?
And that to me was another real key in this game, because, you know, not only did Nevada not punish Jake Haener in the same way that I was worried that they might. No sacks in this game, one TFL for that defensive line. And that was something else that a lot of Wolfpack fans were really worried about coming into the game and started vocalizing, I think, more and more as the game progressed. Fresno State beat them between the tackles with Rivers and Mims. And that was something that reared its head at, you know, against Hawaii early in that game before they kind of put it together. And you know, and I would say primarily before Day-Day Hunter got hurt. And, you know, that's what betrayed them against Kansas State as well. So it seems to me that that's one of those, you know, potentially fatal flaws that could keep them from reaching their ceiling. And so while Jake Haener had, you know, he had a pretty solid game, you know, 256 yards, two touchdowns on 26 of 38 throwing, they finally had balance against a defense that was beatable in that regard. And to me, that was, you know, combined with the defensive stops that the Bulldogs were able to put together, that was enough to come away with a victory. And it almost wasn't, because Carson Strong is just that good that he took them down the field in what, 50 seconds, 90 yards.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's why
he's going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL someday. Yeah.
Maybe number one overall. Like maybe my Houston Texans could get him. I don't know. They've got David Mills. He's doing okay. But just this game lived up to the hype for you?
It did, yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. One more question. Do you think that there's pass interference on that 2-point drive at the band?
It was fine. What do you think?
It didn't seem to me like he had made a lot of contact. He wasn't looking at the ball, but it didn't seem like he was interfering with Dubs before it got there.
What's the rule? Because there's the NFL and college different rule. If you're face guarding in one of the leagues, it's PI automatically. Which one is that? Is that NFL or is that college? Maybe that's the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure.
Because I officiate stuff, so I do water polo, and like there's that similar rule, but it's like it depends what same level. Like if you're doing national high school rules or like the United States rules, there's one different thing about face guarding, which is basically the same thing when you're obviously you're locked up, you're facing the guy, not looking to play the ball. Your defense is going to have a penalty or a call go against them.
Yeah.
So I don't recall which is which. I always forget. But let them play, right? I don't know.
And by the way, to answer your earlier question,
which one?
about the number of catches for Romeo Dubs.
Yeah.
Not the first time a Wolfpack receiver has caught 19 passes in a game.
Well, hold on. Was Nate Burleson went to Nevada, right?
That's correct.
Was it him?
It was him back in 2000, right? Back in 2002 against UTEP. 19 receptions, 179 yards and a touchdown that game.
Current CBS This Morning guy getting big time jobs now.
Yeah. And the only other guy to surpass him as far as Mountain West receivers are concerned is Thomas Spurbeck. You might recall Boise State wide receiver, 20 catches, yes. 281 yards back in 2015.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. 2018. Okay. That's good. All right. Final game of the weekend.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hawaii gets a sweep over to Mexico State. 48-34? Is that the final score?
Yes.
Okay. So is there a concern? Well, we're talking about Hawaii. Scoring points is good, but is there any concern about that defense giving up 34 points to the Aggies?
I mean, not necessarily, because a lot of that production happened after the Warriors had built a big lead and then sort of had to trade blows down the stretch in order to maintain it.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too. It's like it's more of a more or less like, okay, we're up big and kind of see what happens a little bit here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean when you look at what they actually did, they had two pick sixes.
There's that too, yeah. So
that's always going to help. I mean, I suppose if there are any potential, because like it wasn't, again, we're talking about like A-plus performances versus something that maybe isn't. And, you know, I'm not going to call this an A-plus performance because you gave up 34 points to New Mexico State still. So, I mean, there are definitely some things for the Warriors to work on, you know, like power running situations, for example. New Mexico State wasn't great running the football in this game. You know, or maybe they were. I was looking at, I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong column for some reason. You know, their two main running backs averaged at least 6 yards per carry each. And, you know, in terms of advanced stats, you know, power running situations, short yardage situations, in other words, New Mexico State was 11 of 12. In those, you know, and Hawaii also gave up 10 big plays that totaled 227 yards. So it was definitely more of a give and take than I would imagine that Todd Graham and Victor Santa Cruz were probably comfortable with. So there's going to be some things to work on. But the fact that the defense was able to come away with big plays to win the turnover battle, for example, you know, they had the interceptions. They had 8 pass breakups, by the way, which, you know, I think that's still number one in the conference in that regard. You know, Corey Bethley had 1, Cortez Davis had 3, Hugh Nelson had 2. So they gave themselves opportunities to create those breaks for themselves. It wasn't perfect. It was good enough in this game. I think if we, you know, we've definitely seen enough out of this team in the past few weeks to think that they could definitely create some headaches down the stretch for some unsuspecting contender.
You think so? Think they'll knock somebody off that they're not supposed to because of this?
I think so. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, their depth was on display in this game as well, especially on offense, because Dedrick Parson showed up, you know, with, you know, Danny Hunter out for this game. Calvin Turner got banged up a little bit in this game. You know, Turner showed out with 124 yards total offense, but it was really the Dedrick Parson show. 215 total all-purpose yards, 3 touchdowns, all on the ground. I think he was sort of like between he and Turner, like that's the sort of offense that I think they want to run. Like we've seen sort of like the peak Hawaii offense, which isn't the run and shoot that we saw under Nick Rolovich. It's sort of like a balance of speed at the edges that they want to count upon in order to just beat defenders that way. But, you know, Parson gives them that physical element between the tackles that I think it was really lacking earlier in the season. I think we're definitely seeing more of it now. Between that and Braden Shaker coming out and having maybe his best overall game of his young career, you know, 25 of 29, 219 yards, no touchdowns, but more importantly, no interceptions in this game either. They took care of the football. They were balanced. They created a number of big plays. Yeah, they're going to create some headaches, I would say.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Now, I just curious thoughts because they've been good and not so good. You know what I mean? Like they're struggled for some teams. I just want your thoughts because I think they are good enough at times with whoever's going to be quarterback.
Like they aren't. I'll say it like this. You know, they're not the same kind of team as San Jose State. Like their season hasn't had the same kind of trajectory, but I think that they're both in set kind of that same boat where like, obviously at this point, they're both fighting for bowl eligibility and maybe to kind of steal an upset or two down the stretch. I think, you know, the question for Hawaii is, you know, if they can't create turnovers, then can they get more stops consistently? Which,
yeah,
you know, I think maybe in this game, you know, not only did they win the turnover battle, but they also held New Mexico State in check with what they wanted to do. So the secondary won the battle against the Aggies passing game. Jonah Johnson
was only should, right?
24-54 for 228 yards.
Yeah, he had to throw a ton to get there.
I think especially against, you know, they still have to face Carson Strong at some point. Again, you know, they still have to face, I'm trying to remember who else is on their schedule. I don't have it in front of me. But, you know, their strengths line up pretty well with at least some of the opponents they have coming down the stretch. It's just a matter of, you know, maybe figuring out a way not to bend so much if the turnovers aren't clicking, aren't landing or whatever, and if the offense gets, you know, bottled up a little bit, because there's going to be a huge difference again between facing this New Mexico State defense and some of the ones that they have coming down the stretch too.
So they had to get to 7 wins. What are they sitting at? 4-3 now after this? 4-4?
Yeah.
Do both games with the Aggies count?
I believe they do. I haven't seen anything to suggest that they won't.
I'm just half kidding. It used to be that rule, the FCS games didn't count, or now if you do 2, only 1 do. I just half kidding. Want to get a little chuckle out of you. So,
down the stretch, here's their last 5 games.
Thank you. My internet's being trashed, so I apologize this last little bit.
So it's at Utah State, home versus San Diego State.
No.
At UNLV.
Yeah.
Home versus Colorado State. And then at Wyoming to close the year.
They only have four games left? They don't have five?
They have five. That's what I just said.
Oh, I thought I missed one. Sorry. They need to win three of those. Oh, maybe that's kind of the wins. Maybe. Give me a decent chance, right?
That game against Utah State is going to be fascinating to watch this week. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, it's afternoon games. It'll be early out in the islands because it's a 1 o'clock local kick, which means it's what, like eight, what, 4 hour
difference? I think it's like a 3 or 4 hour difference. Yeah, so it's like a 9 3 or 10 a.m. kick out there. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. Because I think that's the most important game because I think they should beat UNLV. Actually, well, they need to win three. So it's going to be the stretch to get there because they'll need to beat. It'll be tough because they're on the road three of those five times. The only game that's not winnable, I would say, is San Diego State. And so out of the other four, they got to win three of those. And that's might be too tall of a task this year. They might be 6 and 7.
We'll see.
We'll see because that San Jose State loss will probably come back and bite them. So, all right. Anything else to add about this game for San Jose State? Or not, sorry. I'm staring at the Spartans here because that's the 17-13. Hawaii, Mountain West. Do we need to talk about the demise of Conference USA because it's not going to be a thing anymore?
Maybe we can talk about it a little bit next week.
We'll do that because Mountain West may have – I still need to write a couple articles that have been sitting there in my queue for like a week and a half. Huh. So, but there's one or two that they'll still work well. But I think the Mountain West may have made the right choice to kind of just take a wait-and-see approach at this time. But that's it for this week. MWR.com. Week 9. Do we have any Thursday games again in Week 9?
No, we have one Friday game, I believe, and then the rest are on Saturday.
All right. So get ready for a long day of Saturday of college football from Mountain West. MWR.com, Twitter, MWCWire, all that fun stuff. Just check the Twitter feed. We do a ton on Twitter. Website does a good amount too. So check everything out. And yeah, we'll see you next week, everybody. Or next show, I should say, a couple days.